The story that we're in the middle of is the 12th story in Sipurei Maaseis, the story of the Baal Tefila. We've covered a lot of it, but there's still quite a bit to go. I'll try to give a brief review of the story as we've had it up until this point, and then we'll pick up from where we left off. In this story, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Nachman, speaks especially about a country that was very steeped in money. Their most important goal in life, their religion, what they worshipped was money. And he mentions that there was a Baal Tefila, a prayer leader, who had a group of people that were very close to him. And he and the people that were close to him, their belief was that the most important purpose in life is to serve Hashem, and especially to pray and expound on the praises of Hashem. And Rabbi Nachman spoke about how this prayer leader went about gathering people around him, and how eventually he comes into contact with the people of that country, this land of wealth, and he tries very hard to get through to them, to convince them that it's not the way it seems to them, that money is the item to worship in life. And eventually, they start being able to hear what he's saying, even though they're not convinced. And things evolve to a point where there is a certain gibor, a very powerful person, who's going from country to country, conquering them. And he's not interested in wealth. The only thing he's interested in is submission. And the people from this land of wealth discover that he's planning to come towards them, and they're very frightened. And the only thing they can think of that could rescue them is they've heard of this other place, another land of tremendous, extraordinary wealth, far greater than theirs, and they figure that by turning to them, they're going to be able to help them. The Baal Tefila gets to them, and he works very hard to convince them that just like you can't help yourselves with your wealth, that other land where they're wealthier than you, they won't be able to help you either. And he says, maybe I'm in a position to help you. And eventually he gets to meet one of the people of the group of this gibor, of this very powerful person who's conquering these lands. And this person starts relating to him how this group was founded. This very powerful person and his band that's with him, that's going about conquering all of these countries, how they first came together. And he starts relating a story that there was a king and a queen and a princess, and the princess had a child that had golden hairs, and the king had several people that were close to him, and at one point there was a storm that broke out, and the storm wreaked incredible havoc and turned everything upside down. And in terms of the palace of the king, it didn't really do any harm. The only thing it did was it grabbed out the child of the princess, which was in a crib, right? The wind of this storm came into the house and grabbed that child and carried out the child with it. The princess went chasing after her baby and the queen and the king, and this caused, again, tremendous havoc, where the king and his family members and all the people that were with him, all of them ended up being displaced, finding themselves in completely different environments. And then he goes on to relate that as a result of things in the world getting turned so upside down by this storm that broke out, what happened was that when people started to settle down again, different groups of people banded together based on their understanding of what the most important goal in life was. And each one of these groups, based on what they understood to be the most important goal in life, chose a person to lead them as their king, the person who they felt was most successful in the area that they considered to be the ultimate goal of life. In the previous year, we discussed some of these groups, and now We're still continuing discussing these different groups that were formed after this major storm that went about analyzing and thinking about what the most important goal in life is, choosing a leader based on that, and settling in a country that was best suited for them to reach their goal. The group that we had discussed, the final group that we discussed in the previous year, was a group that had come to the conclusion that the most important thing is to settle the world, to inhabit the world. And since in order to inhabit the world, what's required is marriages, and what motivates, what inspires marriage in many cases is a beautiful woman. So therefore, they chose a Yifas Toyar, a beautiful woman, to be their leader. And they chose a land that was best suited for this item, for reproducing, for having many children and inhabiting the world. The next group came to the conclusion that the most important thing in life is, for mankind, is speech, dibur. Because the fact is that what differentiates one level of living beings from another, what makes human beings superior to, in most cases, animals, is a higher level of speech. We know the Torah uses that wording, Umoisar ha'odam en abehemo oyim ki hakol hovel. That the distinction between man and animal kingdom is referred to as chai, and man is referred to as medaber, one who speaks, because of the higher level of speech. And therefore, they searched for someone who they felt was most outstanding in the realm of speech. A person who, according to their understanding, a person who knew many languages and spoke a lot. They figured this was obviously the person who was most prominent in speech. Person who would speak a lot and knew the most languages. So they searched and they found a crazy Frenchman. This is the terminology that Rabbi Nizal uses. Ish Tzorfati Meshuga. And this person went about talking to himself, so that this person never ran out of conversation. Most people, when they have someone to talk to, they're talking. When there's nobody to talk to, they're silent until they run into someone else they can speak to. This person, even when there weren't any people around, he was able to continue speaking. So they asked him if he knows other languages also. And he responded, yes, he knows many languages. So they immediately understood that this is their man, this is their candidate for leadership. The fact that he knows many languages and that he's talking so much. He can even talk to himself. So therefore, he found favor in their eyes and they accepted him as their king. And once again, they chose a place that they felt was best suited for this. And they settled there with their king. And Rabbi Nachman makes a sarcastic remark, and he says, surely he led them in a very righteous path. Once again, we're seeing in each one of these groups that because they were formed as a result of a major upheaval in the world, even though there was some truth to what they understood to be the important goal of life, as a result of the upheaval, their truth was perverted, so that they weren't able necessarily to reach the real truth of what they interpreted to be the goal in life, the most important thing in life. They weren't able to achieve perfection or a proper path, but rather each time it was a little bit of a misinterpretation or a misunderstanding of the true fulfillment of what they interpreted to be the ultimate goal in life. The next group, and again, this story, as the part in the story that we're up to now, is being related by one of the soldiers of the Gibor, one of the members of the camp of the Gibor, is relating this story to the Baal Tefillah, to the prayer leader. He's telling him how his group was formed. And in the process, he's telling him there was this major storm, there was the king and his family and his men, this major upheaval, and these different groups have formed. And eventually he's going to come to speaking about the group that he's a member of. The next group understood that the most important goal in life is happiness. Because we know that if we watch people going through their life cycle, the highlights in their life are times of joy and happiness. For example, when a person is born, that's an occasion for celebration. The moment a person begins in this world, there's celebration, joy, happiness. When the person reaches the next one of the next major steps in their life cycle, person gets married, which is also a new beginning, where this person who at first was one person, now suddenly they're joining with a mate and they're able to build, propagate, expand. At a wedding also, there's major joy, happiness, and celebration. And so too, when a king succeeds in conquering another land, expanding his kingdom, there's joy, celebration. So therefore we see that the goal, what people are trying to achieve in life, the most important thing is happiness. So therefore, they understood in order to find their best suited leader, they would have to find the person who is the happiest. Because that person has come closest to fulfilling the goal in life, and he's the one they would accept as their king. So sure enough, they went and searched, and they found a heathen, a non-Jew, who was walking with a filthy shirt, carrying a bottle, a liquor bottle. And he had other heathens following him. This was obviously a group of drunks, dirty, filthy drunks. And the leader of the group they saw was very happy, singing as is the custom of people in that state, people who are seriously drunk. And they saw that he appeared to be very happy, person who has no worries at all. So sure enough, he found favor in their eyes, because it appeared to them that he had achieved the greatest degree of success in this important goal in life, happiness. And they accepted him as their king. And once again, he surely led them in a good way. And they chose a land that they felt was best suited for achieving this happiness that was tied into liquor, wine. So they chose a place that had vineyards, that was best suited for growing vineyards. And not only that, not only were the grapes of this vineyard able to be used to produce alcoholic beverages, but even from the pits, they were able to also make brandy, other types of liquor, so that every single part of the grape was being used to its fullest. Because once again, they understood that this is success. Their definition of success was to drink, get drunk, and celebrate, be happy. Even though the happiness wasn't based on anything tangible, anything real. Because they didn't really have anything specific to celebrate, to be happy about. But still, just being happy alone, even though it wasn't attached to anything specific, they felt that was success. That was achieving the true goal in life, and therefore they chose this land that was best suited for this, and they went and settled there. Interesting to note, a side note for a moment, the Gemara tells us about the land of Egypt, that the Egyptians worshipped sheep. And sheep, there are several different words in the Torah used to mean sheep. Son, soin is one of the words. Another word is ashterois. Ashterois soinoi. The word ashterois means wealth. And the Gemara tells us that the reason why this word is associated with sheep is because sheep are something that bring great wealth to one who owns them. And the Gemara says the reason for this is that a sheep, every part of it can be used, can be sold. The wool can be shorn and sold, and the flesh and the hooves. The Gemara describes about 10 different usages for every single part of the sheep. And therefore, this is what's used as a symbol of wealth. Just as in the part of the story we just related, the one who was able to make use of every single part of the grape, not just the part that most people are familiar with using, but even to be able to take the pits and use them to serve a similar purpose as to that which most people would discard as waste matter, to be able to take that and apply that to propagating wealth, or in their case, happiness, that's the one who's reached a higher level of success. We know, for example, when it comes to agriculture, things like that, fertilizer is one of the things that's used to strengthen the soil and to increase produce, quality, quantity. The next group, Rabbi Nizal tells us, was a group whose understanding was that the most important goal in life is knowledge, wisdom. And Rabbi Nachman describes them very briefly. He says they chose a very smart person to be their king, and they chose a land that they felt was best suited for advancing in knowledge and wisdom. The next group, I believe we're up to the ninth group now, was a group who felt that the most important thing in life is for a person to fully enjoy food and drink. In Yiddish, there's a term, pilvin sich, which is a person who eats and drinks a lot, not just for the sake of simply eating and drinking, but in order to develop their body. They're looking to pamper themselves with food and drink in a manner to develop large muscles, bodybuilding. And they sought a very muscular person who was also very much into nutrition and very concerned about what they eat and drink, developing the body. That's the person's main goal, because they felt that the person who had the best physique, that's the one who occupies a very important place in the world, or the largest place in the world, in a sense. And therefore, he's come close to achieving this great goal. So sure enough, they found a person who was a very tall athlete. And he found, they thought that he was best suited to be their king, their leader, and they accepted him, and they chose a land that was best suited for this bodybuilding, nutrition, developing their bodies to the greatest heights. And finally, this soldier related that there was another group who said that all of these goals that these other nine groups chose for themselves, that's not really the purpose of life, the fulfillment of life, but rather the greatest fulfillment in life is for a person to be involved in praying to Hashem and being humble, recognizing the authority and kingdom of the Creator, and therefore considering oneself as nothing compared to the Creator of the world. And they sought out a prayer leader, a master of prayer, who they felt was best suited to help them advance, and they appointed him as their king. At this point, there's a note that's inserted that anyone who will analyze these different groups will realize that they were all obviously mistaken and became confused about the true interpretation of what's important in life. And it was only this 10th group that we mentioned that really realized the truest goal in life, how fortunate they were. This was all related by this soldier who was part of the group of this of the Gibor, the powerful person. And now we went on to relate that he and his colleagues are part of this group of muscular people, the people who felt that the most important thing in life was bodybuilding, developing their body. And he said that one day, a group of us was traveling, and following them were wagons that were loaded with food and supplies. And this group of muscular people that were traveling, when they would walk on a road, everybody would step aside to make way for them. No one wanted to engage them in any conflict because they had such powerful appearance. And yet, one day, when they were walking on the road together, this company of very powerful people, followed by their wagons of food and drink and supplies, an extraordinary powerful person was coming towards them. And when he encountered them, he didn't step aside like most other people who encountered them, but rather he walked right into their camp and pushed all of them aside. He dispersed all of them. He made all of them step aside for him. And they were all petrified of him. And after he got past this group, he went into their wagons that were loaded with food and drink and supplies, and he ate everything that was there. And they were all very impressed by him, at his great power and strength, that he wasn't afraid of any of them. He went right through them and ate everything they had on the wagons. So they immediately fell before him and declared, "Long live the king," because they understood that he was definitely most qualified to be their king. And they also understood that the king that they had until now, who they felt was very muscular and powerful, will certainly give up his kingdom for this Gibor, who was obviously much more powerful. And sure enough, that's what happened. This Gibor was accepted by all of them as king, and he is the Gibor now that's traveling with this group of Giborim. He is this very powerful person traveling with this large group of powerful, muscular people who's going about conquering the world. However, he says, the leader, this great powerful person, says that his intention is not simply conquest. He has a completely different motive. So now the Baal Tefillah, the prayer leader who's speaking to this soldier, this powerful person, says to him, what makes him so powerful? Where does he get his strength from? So this soldier who he's speaking to says, there was once a country that refused to submit to him. He's going about trying to conquer the world, and there was one country that he engaged that refused to subdue and submit. And this, our leader, this king, this Gibor, took the sword that he has, and this sword that he has three powers, as I mentioned earlier, previously. One of the powers is that when he lifts up this sword, all the officers of the army flee. They run away in fear. As soon as the Baal Tefillah heard this, as soon as the Master of Prayer heard this, he understood immediately that this is definitely the Gibor that was part of the king's group, the close circle of the king that we discussed earlier. And at this point, the Baal Tefillah asked this soldier, would it be possible for me to meet with him, to meet with your leader, your king? The soldier said, I'll go inform him about this, that you'd like to meet him, and will ask if he gives permission. Sure enough, they went, they asked, and he granted the Baal Tefillah an audience with him. As soon as the Baal Tefillah came to see him, they both recognized each other immediately, that they had both been members of that king's court, in a sense. And there was tremendous joy and happiness by both of them over the fact that they finally met up again. They had been also separated and dispersed by that storm that broke out. So there was tremendous joy and celebration upon meeting each other again. And at the same time, there was also a lot of crying between them because they remembered their king and the other members of their group. So they cried about this, and there was this unusual mix of tremendous joy, celebration, happiness, and crying and tears. And they both discussed how they had gotten to this place, and the Gibor, this powerful leader, related to the Baal Tefillah, to the prayer leader, that from the time that that storm had broken out, which caused them all to disperse, when he returned to the original place there, and he couldn't find the king or the king's men, he went to search for them. And in his search, he passed different places where he understood in each one of these places that one of the king's men or one of the members of the king's family had been in that place, and yet he couldn't connect with them. For instance, he came to a certain place where he was able to recognize that the king had been there, and yet somehow he couldn't connect with him. He couldn't find him. He went to a different place where he realized that the queen had been there, and yet he couldn't search for her. He couldn't find her. And so too with all the other members of the king's family and entourage. And the Gibor said, the only one whose place I didn't come to was yours, the Baal Tefillah, this prayer leader. So the Baal Tefillah responded to him, you should know that after we got dispersed, I also was traveling and searching, and I came upon all the places that you did, each one of those places where it appeared that one of the king's entourage was certainly there somehow and yet couldn't be found. However, I did come to your place also. I came to a place where I knew it was the place of the Gibor, your place. For instance, and now the Baal Tefillah relates each one of the places he found. For instance, I came to a certain place where I saw a crown, a king's crown. And I understood that this is certainly the place of the king. And yet somehow I couldn't find him. I couldn't search for him, couldn't find him. I went further and I arrived at a place where there was a sea of blood. And I understood that this sea of blood came about as a result of the tears of the queen, crying over what happened to her and her family and this whole entourage. And that she is certainly theirs, and yet I can't connect to her. Then I went further, and I came across a sea of milk. And this time I understood that this sea was formed from the milk of the princess. The princess had a baby, a small child. The baby was taken away by this storm wind that pulled it out of its crib and took it away. And obviously, because of the fact that she still had this need to nurse, the milk kept coming and formed this sea of milk. So I understood that she must be here and yet can't find her. I went still further and I found a place. I found the golden hairs of the baby, the child of the princess. And I didn't take any of those hairs at all. And I understood that this is definitely the place of this child, the child of the princess. I went still further, and I came across a sea of wine. And I understood that this sea was formed from the words of the Melitz. The Melitz, a Melitz is a bard. A Melitz is one who's able to console people in the worst of circumstances. And he's also a person who's able to defend, to speak well on behalf of any type of person. And this Melitz, as we learned earlier, obviously, because of this tragedy that had happened to the king and the queen, that their grandchild was pulled out by this storm, and the whole family and their whole all those close to them dispersed in this way, I understood that this Melitz is consoling, he's involved in consoling the king and the queen. First he consoles the king and the queen, then he speaks words of consolation to the princess, and from all of these words of consolation that he speaks was formed this sea of wine. As we know, the Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, in the Song of Songs, V'chikech k'yein hatoiv. Your mouth, the upper palate of your mouth, is like sweet wine, like a wonderful wine. And once again, even though I came across this sea of wine, I couldn't find the source of it, this Melitz. I went still further, and I came across a rock, a large stone, which had engraved on it something that appeared to look like a hand with all the different lines in the palm of the hand and in the fingers. And I understood that this was the place of the Chacham of the king, the wise man of the king, who had carved out this hand, this image of the hand on this stone, which was like a map, like we mentioned earlier. It had all the different lines on it, the lines that appear on the palm of a hand, which are similar to the lines that appear on a map that map out a country and its roads and its rivers, all the different things inside of it. And once again, I saw this, but I couldn't see the source of it, the Chacham who had made it. I went still further, and I came to a place on a mountain, tables made out of gold, and credenzias, and other fantastic treasures of gold and silver, precious stones, things like that. And I understood that this is obviously the place of the treasurer of the king. And once again, even though I saw all of these items, the treasurer himself I couldn't find. This is the Baal Tefillah relating his travels to the Gibor. Now the Gibor said, I also passed all of these places, and when I came to that place that you mentioned earlier, where you saw the hairs, the golden hairs of the son of the princess, I took seven hairs, seven of the golden hairs that came from that child, that were from all the different colors, that had all kinds of flavors, like, of the color of gold. And this was very precious to me. Interesting to note, the Tikkun HaZohar tells us about King David, that he had a golden hair that had in it seven shades of gold. So the Gibor related that after he took these seven hairs, I sat down, wherever I sat down, and I sustained myself with whatever I could. I ate herbs and vegetation until there was nothing else to eat, and I moved on. And when I left the place that I had been in, I realized that I had forgotten my bow there. So the Baal Tefillah told him, I came across that bow that you forgot there, and I understood that it's obviously your bow, the bow of the Gibor. However, I couldn't find you. So now the Gibor continues relating his story to the Baal Tefillah, that when I left there, I was traveling and I met this group of people who were also very powerful. And I went right into them because I was starving. I hadn't eaten for a very long time and I was desperate to eat. And as soon as I met up with them, they accepted me as their king. And now I'm traveling with them to conquer the world with the hope that I'm going to discover the king and his entourage and his men. So my purpose is not simply to conquer the world for myself, but obviously this Gibor knew that there was a king and an entourage of the king, and he had a part in that. And his purpose in traveling to try to conquer the world is to meet up with them and to try to set everything right. At this point, the Baltfila says to the Gibor, what do we do about these people? What do we do about this country where they're all steeped in money, where they've turned money into a religion, and they worship it, and they bring sacrifice, all the different things that we mentioned earlier? The Gibor, this powerful person, responded to the Baltfila that I heard from the king that it's possible to help and to correct people that have fallen into all types of mistakes. However, people who have fallen into this mistake, where they worship money, where to them that's their goal in life, that's their the most important thing in their life, then it's just about impossible to change them, to be able to help them. And therefore, you're not going to be able to be effective with them because it's impossible to change them. However, I did hear from the king that through the path of the sword, which is where the Gibor got his strength from, through that path, it's possible even to be able to help these people who have become steeped in this religion of money, this worship of money, to be able to take them out of it. At this point, the Gibor and the Baltfila continued sitting together, talking together, and they spoke at great length about this country that has the worst problem. And the Baltfila spoke to the Gibor about the country, this country of wealth, this land of wealth, that had sent him as their messenger to try to help them with the Gibor. And the Baltfila basically asked him for an extension of time. Is he willing to give them more time before they have to give their decision as to whether they're ready to submit to the Gibor or not? And sure enough, the Baltfila succeeded in getting the Gibor to give them an extension. And the Baltfila and the Gibor set up a system whereby they should be able to identify each other. They set up special signs between them. And then the Baltfila left and went on his way. While the Baltfila is traveling now, he came across a group of people who were praying, and they were carrying with them all kinds of prayer books. At first, the Baltfila was very afraid of them, and they were also afraid of him. So the Baltfila stood, and he began to pray, and they also prayed. Afterwards, he asked them, "Who are you?" They said to him that when this great storm had broken out in the world, which caused all the people to become dispersed and scattered, and this group chose this as their ideal, and that group chose a different ideal, we chose to involve ourselves primarily in prayer. And we sought and found a Baltfila, a prayer leader, who we designated as our king. When the Baltfila heard about this, he was very pleased, because this was also what he was seeking. This was also his goal in life. So he began to speak with them and reveal to them his understanding about prayer and his prayers and the different books that he wrote with prayers. When they heard about him, their eyes were opened and they realized how superior he is to them, to their group, and even to their leader, and they immediately accepted him as their king. their previous king immediately gave up the kingdom when he met him and he realized how far greater he was than him. And the Baal Tefila taught them and enlightened them. And he actually made them, he raised them to a level of being complete tzaddikim. Rabbeinu Zal writes, tzaddikim gemurim gedoyle ma'oid. Really great, perfect tzaddikim. Because even before they had met him, they were righteous people, because we see what they set as their main goal in life. But this Baal Tefila enlightened them. He opened their eyes to the point where they became really awesome tzaddikim. And at that point, the Baal Tefila sent a letter to the Gibor, informing him about this, telling him about this episode, how he had met this group of people, and they accepted him as their king. We'll hold it here for now. The story is going to continue regarding the Baal Tefila returning to the land of wealth and how he deals with that. And we still have a number of very interesting episodes before we come to the end of the story, when we'll go back and clarify as much as we can from the different commentaries that are available as sources of clarification on this story. We were coming back from a break of about 5-6 weeks when we had the last shiur. I hope that we're going to continue and complete this 12th story and go on to the 13th and final story of Rabbi Nachman's stories. Best wishes for a good day, a good week. Regarding the hair of King David, I'm not really prepared right now to elaborate on it. I hope that as we go through the commentary, we'll have more information on that.